out. It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Denise Lee.
Hello, Denise.
Morena, Laura, how you doing?
Well, I don't think it's Morena anymore. We've just crossed over.
Oh, we have. Okay, all right. I'll retract that.
No worries. I am good. What about you? How are things in politics treating you?
Yeah, good. It's been another busy week in Parliament. We're in the middle week of a three-week sitting block. Mm. So last year, all sitting blocks were 4 weeks at a time. This year, it can be random. Sometimes we're sitting for two, sometimes for three, and we're in the middle of a three-week. So next week's going to be another big one because we've got euthanasia back again.
Mm-hmm.
That tends to be every other Wednesday that we're sitting. It's a big full program, Laura, but it's good.
Mm. Gotta love a busy life, don't you?
Aha.
Well, I will jump onto it. We're talking the gender pay equity bill because we just had Women's Suffrage Day yesterday and we're still seeing no movement on this bill, really. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, no, look, it's a real big puzzle to me. I had a really, really awesome privilege of tabling a pay equity legislation framework bill when I first became an MP 2 years ago.
Mm.
And I don't know if anyone's familiar with the process, but a private member's bill, any MP can put in one good idea and you've got to have it drawn out, like, you know, literally lottery, you've got to get drawn out. Well, within 2 weeks of putting that bill in, it was drawn out.
Mm.
So I was delighted and we went and debated in Parliament and, you know, big handbrake, it didn't even make it past its first reading because the government decided not to support it. Lo and behold, a few months later, they introduced their own pay equity legislation that is 90% the same as the one that I introduced, no kidding. And then they've got the numbers, it passed, and we debate it in select committee, the same select committee I'm in, so that's good. It gets back into the debating chamber and big handbrake again. It's stalled at the second reading. Now, you know, 2 years down the track since my bill, but it's 4 months since they put theirs into Parliament. And seriously, there's no word about it. We asked in the House what's coming up, when's this coming up, nothing.
Mm.
So for me, Suffrage Day again represents another whole year without women being able to go to their employers and start a bargaining process to get paid what they're worth.
Mm. I know we've talked about the fact that your bill is very, very similar to this one. Could you point out some of the differences between them for us?
So the main differences that's been pointed out sort of, you know, at length by the government and some members of the media is a hierarchy of comparators. So we believed in the bill that I lodged that when you first approach an employer that you be able to demonstrate using comparators, so being able to compare across different industries how you think that you have been underpaid and deserve to start a bargaining process. So what's happened now is that the gate been opened a lot wider for anyone to start a bargaining process at any point without using those comparators. So we're happy to have that debate. We're actually supporting the legislation, Laura, and let me just be very clear on that. It doesn't have the comparators that we wanted, but we support what's happening, but we can't vote for it and send it through and make it into law if it's not actually progressing. So can Emily's Galloway please let me know what the heck he is doing right now because we've got no clue.
Mm. There's also been an interesting report released from Westpac recently. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, the 30%.
Yeah, the 30%.
Take it. Yeah, that's massive.
That's
massive. So my understanding is that the financial services sector as a whole has a gap of about 23%. I mean, that's not good enough either, but 30%'s right up there.
Mm.
So, you know, what they need to do, and they've committed to it, is getting on with some leadership in that regard. And, you know, look, hey, if they are prepared to talk about their pay gap and what they're doing to address it, then, you know, that might give them a competitive advantage and get others doing the same thing as well.
Mm. Do you think more businesses should be getting on to being more transparent about their pay equity?
Well, quite frankly, yes, I do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if Westpac's prepared to do something like that, then maybe they might find, as I said, you know, a competitive advantage for it, that that'll increase their positive perception and encourage others to do the same.
Mm.
You know, sometimes this is how the market rolls. If you're prepared to say, look, hey, we're working on this, then, you know, you may be an attractive proposition for fantastic female employees and send a signal.
Mm. I'm just thinking, legislatively, is there a possibility you might be interested in pushing for more transparency amongst businesses?
Yeah, so our position, Laura, is that we want the market to get to that position. And we can see, as from the negative press from Westpac, what the possibilities are. If they turn that into a positive and led the way, then others would climb on board. I've got no doubt about that. That's happened with other issues across other sectors. You know, we'd like to see different sectors, different businesses, definitely the big business sector in New Zealand, do this from their own volition because it's the right thing to do.
Mm. I did just get a text in, if you might be interested in responding to it. Someone said in regards to your bill that pay equity was very flawed, and the idea that women who are discriminated against have to come up with the proof without having pay transparency is putting all onus on women rather than businesses doing the work and not discriminating.
Yeah, I guess it's how you interpret coming up with proof.
Mm.
So in my version, I didn't think it's I guess, cumbersome or negative at all. Now, bear in mind that women who are looking at comparators would have all the support and all the information that they need to do this. It's in my mind, I think it's a good way to approach a bargaining table and say, hey, here's the research, I've done the research, here's where I can see that across different sectors I'm being underpaid. Can we please start a bargaining process? That's what comparators does. Now, again, I'd say to that person who texted in, we are supporting what the government has done in terms of their own version, but we'd like to see progress. You know, if the gates have been widened for women to get into the bargaining framework, that's great, fantastic, but where's the progress? So happy to debate these certain points, but it's like looking at a little speck when the massive log in the situation is that we are 2 years down the track, 2 years down the track with absolutely zilch progress.
Mm.
The government could have taken my bill 2 years ago, used their numbers, amended the heck out of it in select committee, and we could have passed it 2 years ago.
Mm. I will shift on to our next subject, which is the end of life choice kind of referendum question that we're discussing today. So what do you think of the proposed question so far?
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of, personally, I'm kind of not sure what to do with it.
Mm.
So the question so far coming out of New Zealand First is simply they're saying at the referendum at next year's election, you'll be asked, do you support the End of Life Choice Act coming into force? So the bill that we're debating, we're spending hours and hours and hours, clause by clause, massive amount of amendments, we're into the hundreds of amendments. The public are going to be asked, do you support that bill?
Mm.
So I'm really struggling with this one, Laura, because what are the odds that all members of the New Zealand public are going to get a chance to read all of the bill and all of the amendments, whatever they may end up being, in time to make an informed decision? I just personally, I'm leaning towards no on a referendum. I can tell you personally, I've spent hours and hours and hours. Other MPs have a general gist of where they're going, and even in some cases give their proxy to another MP. I'm not doing that. I literally read every single amendment. I'm in the debating chamber, I'm participating, and I'm voting on every single little vote. So if I'm having to do that amount of work, you know, I think it's a real tough call.
Would you support Maggie Berry's question, which is much more straightforward? Do you support euthanasia and assisted suicide for people who want it in New Zealand?
Well, I likely have the same issues there too, in that, you know, the public's ability to get across some very complex and very sometimes confusing issues around euthanasia. So as I stand now, and I do have to do some thinking, I will admit, ahead of New Zealand's First Amendment to get a referendum. You know, I want to be constructive, but I do have a problem with the New Zealand public at large not being able to do the immense amount of work required to get their heads around an issue that is quite literally life and death.
But do you think, because, I mean, just personally, I have an opinion, and I think it would be very difficult for someone to change my opinion on many issues. Do you think your opinion is easily swayed?
Do you mean on this topic or just a
on
general
this
statement?
And on this topic.
Well, no, look, of course we all have a natural bias. You know, that's just to be human. But I've had an interesting approach to this bill. I am likely to vote no, I will admit, but I have voted yes for quite a few amendments that strengthen the bill up. So I'm taking, I guess, a constructive approach to this. So in some ways and in some aspects of the bill, Laura, yes, my mind can be changed, but in others, I'm looking at the overall picture and have still grave concerns, especially around coercion and vulnerable seniors or and other members of society that, you know, that may find themselves in a position asking for assisted suicide when they, in fact, wasn't really their first choice.
Do you think, though, for the general public, as you've said, your opinion is not easily swayed, but in some areas can be. I'm in the same boat. Do you think people who are engaging with this and would vote on this would be in the same boat as the two of us?
Well, that's a real danger that you'll get to the referendum should it happen next year, and you just have a preformed opinion, have done no research, no looking at underlying issues, where the debate got to, how the act, should it pass, got there, and then just go with your gut instinct. And this is a big topic to just go with gut instinct.
Fair. Although I will say, just to kind of round that out, it is a little pandering to the public to think that they aren't engaging with this in some ways.
Yeah. Now, look, I totally acknowledge that it's hard for me to find the words to that's not at all what I mean. I know that there's plenty of people who would take a very active interest and do their research. I just think on big issues such as this, we're elected, we get paid big bucks to work our butts off. I'm just being frank, and I've spent hours on this. I know a lot of other MPs have, and I think that this is absolutely core business for us. And you know, we're about making good law, and I have concerns about this particular law being reduced to one question.
I'll end on my last question of the day, which, you know, I love to go more personal. local elections are well, voting starting today. I wanted to know if you do anything special around elections. I love to go get coffee with people, and I mean, for general elections, and force everyone to vote. What do you like to do?
Ooh, so I'd have two answers, because for local elections, mm-hmm. so from today, you're going to get in your mailbox a yes. postal ballot at some stage. Mm-hmm. So for local elections, my tradition would be take a picture of me mailing my postal ballot, because only about 35% of us actually do that, mm-hmm. which is a horrific figure.
Yeah.
Am I the best person to ask? Because I've been a candidate in local politics. Of course I take photos of me mailing. I'm not suggesting to all BFM listeners that they take pictures of them mailing their ballot. Well, actually maybe
nice
it's a good
Instagram
idea.
They're my post.
Incentive.
Yeah.
Now, come general elections, Laura, my tradition for that is, and again, I'm a bit biased because I'm a candidate in it, I go vote, I take my kids. You are allowed to take your children with you even if they're not able to vote, but my daughter's turned 18, so she can vote in the booth next to me. I hope she ticks my name. If you're listening, Sydney, that's... Your mum is giving you a very, very big subliminal message. And then, like you, I go out for coffee because I can't campaign. I can't do anything on the day. I'm not allowed to. So I go for coffee and put my feet up until the results come through.
Love it. Well, I am looking forward to speaking with you next week, Denise.
Cool.
I hope
Thanks,
you have
Laura.
A lovely weekend.
Same to you. See ya.
See ya.
The National Party's Denise Lee on 95 BFM.